Some of the gaps in internet access in this country are simply because of underinvestment in low-income and communities of color. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace Tech. I'm Molly Wood. All this week, Marketplace Tech is doing a new series called The Internet is Everything, looking at access, infrastructure, and cost. That question of cost comes down to competition and whether telecom companies have invested in bringing service to where you live. Mignon Clyburn is a former member of the Federal Communications Commission. She says we have to acknowledge that race and poverty play a role in where companies decide to offer access.
If you were to go in rural areas where there is less infrastructure, less density and the like, it is not uncommon for you to pay $150 per month for less than robust internet access. So there are gross disparities when it comes to more affluent neighborhoods and more dense neighborhoods than there are for lower income and rural communities.
And is that mostly a function of infrastructure, or are there also, you know, competition constraints?
In urban communities, some of that is about redlining. There have been cases that have been shown where on certain neighborhoods with more affluence, it has been shown that the infrastructure was not built, that robust offerings were not realized. I will say to you that in rural communities, it is partly a function of infrastructure. It costs more per square mile to pass fewer people. You're going to get less of a return on your investment. And so you do not see as much by way of infrastructure there. You see more satellite options out there, which cost more and oftentimes may not give you that robust coverage.
Right. I mean, I really want to put a fine point on this because I think we have had conversations a lot that talk about last mile problems and accessibility. And you're saying that the disparity in internet access is also a reflection of social disparities.
Absolutely. So you're going to follow the money. You're going to follow the quote unquote smart investment. You're going to, you know, follow the places where you've got mixed use or other businesses that you're going to make most of your money from. And where those people live that work there, those are the places where the highest fees are going to go. But if you're in a community where I sit, where I grew up, it is definitely the working class individual where they live, you're not going to see as many options. You're not going to see that investment either on the roads or what is under the road or attached to those power lines because it has been assumed by those that the less affluent you are, the less likely you are going to use these advanced services. And honestly, that the affluent part might be right, but in terms of use and need of use, that is totally incorrect.
So when we talk about internet as a utility, as a matter of classification, do you think that that is what is going to be necessary to essentially force companies to build out an infrastructure that's equal for all?
What you have seen out of this is the price of not being connected. And using the classic business model, using the classic market-based approach, has disadvantaged not only those individuals who previously either could not afford or did not have access to the internet at home. Now you're seeing other businesses who are disadvantaged, other educational institutions like the colleges who don't know who's going to walk back into their doors or, you know, who's going to be able to sign in and sign on. You're seeing those negative ripple effects of those businesses in educational constructs. They're being disrupted too. So the lack of that forward-thinking investment by the government, by private industry, and by nonprofits have created or have intensified this very imperfect storm of lack of connectivity and depressed opportunities. And, you know, that was always one of my biggest fears when I was at the FCC. Now it is a nightmare for millions.
How much is COVID an opportunity to really look deeply at some of the policies and actions that could improve access for everyone?
When you see 14% of the children between 3 and 18 sheltering in place or sheltering at home, but cannot complete their homework, or it's more difficult to complete their homework assignments. When you see those with disabilities and special needs, especially those students, you know, having fewer options because they might not be connected at home. I think what this has done in a very painful way is affirm the need to move in a connected direction. And so what this has revealed and in some ways accelerated for us, that being connected is a lifesaver.
This fall, your former employer, the FCC, has announced it'll spend $16 billion to provide broadband service to areas of the country that don't have it. How much do you know about this and how hopeful are you?
So if you were to just look at the headlines, you would be ecstatic. You know, it will affirm to you that the agency is investing in a connected future. But what the headlines do not tell you is that all of the tools at their disposal, they're not being used. It is not enough simply, though this is important, simply to have infrastructure in the ground. You can build it to my home, to my doorstep. You can say, here it is, but if I cannot afford the monthly cost of service, then it means nothing. It does nothing for me. What the FCC has not done was to look at the Lifeline program, which seeks to directly provide an economic subsidy or assistance to those who cannot afford voice and or broadband service. That program has effectively been gutted by this administration, and now we're paying the price. Those who cannot afford a monthly service have no backstop. And now if that program, if the Lifeline program would have been allowed to expand more robustly to broadband, to offer relief in terms of broadband costs, if we were allowed to reform the reforms that the previous administration put in place to allow for more competition, I am willing to bet my next breath that some of the conversations that we're having now that are painful, that are going to be incredibly expensive, we could have avoided some of those costs.
Mignon Clyburn is a former member of the Federal Communications Commission. We should note that after she left the FCC, Clyburn advised T-Mobile on its acquisition of Sprint. She says she does believe that merger will bring service to underserved areas. And now for some related audio. All this week in the podcast, we're hearing stories from you, our listeners. Today's story comes from Ariel Smith. She lives about 15 miles north of St. Paul, Minnesota. She's retired after decades of working for the state and county government. And she says she can't afford a computer or smartphone, and so has no way to access the internet at home.
Before COVID hit, I was using the computer at the public library, primarily for reading email and I'm interested in a lot of things, so I'd like to just surf the net and look up things I was interested in and do a little shopping, of course. It was very easy to plan to go in and read my emails, but then end up off in some cyberspace just following links, you know. But then the libraries have been closed since March. I live on a fixed income with a pension and Social Security. Now, so much is dependent on the internet, where if you want any information about anything, you have to go online. There's sometimes not even a phone number available to call. And especially now with the pandemic, learning about healthcare, learning about the virus, all of that is pretty much internet-based. So I do think internet access should be universal, but again, if it's like a utility, you'd still have to pay for it, and I would have to somehow work that in along with the electricity and the water and the gas and et cetera, et cetera. And right now there's just not really room to do that. I feel kind of isolated without internet access right now. I'm looking forward to when the library's open and I can go back and surf and read email and shop to my heart's content.
Arielle Smith lives about 15 miles north of St. Paul, Minnesota. Now, you heard her mention affordability, and you heard Mignon Clyburn mention the Federal Lifeline Program. You may never have heard of that. Lots of people haven't, including people who need it. Lifeline is a program that helps low-income people get affordable telephone and broadband internet access. During the COVID-19 pandemic, the FCC has loosened eligibility restrictions so more people can apply for Lifeline services. However, some members of Congress asked the FCC in April to make it a lot more obvious to people that this program exists. And in January, the FCC implemented changes to the Lifeline program that will probably reduce the number of companies that offer Lifeline services. Some analysts said that could cut off Lifeline access to something like 70% of recipients, or about 8 million people. More to come on Lifeline. And get caught up on all our stories from this week at marketplace.org/internet. I'm Molly Wood, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.